Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. With me today is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going, buddy?
Been better. Spilled wine all over my carpet right before we started. That's why we're 15 minutes late.
Yeah, big apologies to everybody listening live on Twitch. Carter spilled an entire glass of wine.
Red wine.
Real smooth there.
I think Bev showed me right as I walked, scrambled to clean up, that she's drinking a white like a grown-up. And
she's smart.
That's
with that.
I got left, and yeah. It was a heavy pour.
We do have a special episode of the Chase Down Podcast today. We're doing things just a little bit differently here, talking about a cause that I think is really, really important. With us today is a special guest, Beverly Gooden. Beverly is a social activist and advocate for domestic violence survivors, as well as a survivor herself. And also, very importantly, and a very, very important qualification to be on this podcast, she is a kid that has never lied to a blind man, which I just really appreciate. Bev, how's it going?
Good. How are y'all?
As established,
well, not
starts. This but, you know, I think we're going to recover. I think we're glad to have you on the pod. And I think that's really going to help raise my spirits.
Yeah, we really, really are happy to have you on here. Obviously, I came to know you through Cavs Twitter. And then just over the years, I've seen the causes that you've been involved with, the activism and just what a strong presence you've been there. Unfortunately, we actually do have some NBA topics that are very applicable here. Today, there was the footage leaked by TMZ of DeMarcus Cousins threatening to shoot or put a bullet through his ex-girlfriend's head over his child not being allowed to go to his wedding. When the news first broke, the first headline I saw was DeMarcus Cousins threatens ex-girlfriend over child not being allowed to go to the wedding or some variation of that. And I was like, Okay, like I can understand the stress of a wedding, situations like that. I can see a volatile conversation, something like that. But then when you get into the threat, it just immediately, I just kind of sunk in my chair. And what was your reaction when you saw that news and kind of saw the story break today, Bev?
Yeah, I mean, like, sadly, it's not an anomaly. I mean, it almost seems like every month a new story comes out about an athlete that is violent in some way to their partner or ex-partner. Maybe not physical violence, but emotional violence or, like, psychological violence or threatening violence. It seems like it's almost common now, and I just can't figure out why people have such a difficult time not being violent when they don't get what they want. Like, because that's all it was. I mean, not that, you know, it's a small thing to not have your kid at your wedding. Sure, that's a big thing. But, like, you don't respond to that by threatening violence, especially the type of violence that ends someone's life. Like, what are you doing? Like, why would you do that? I don't know. It just feels like there are better ways to deal with rejection. I think in general, you know, sports takes up a lot of social causes, you know, a lot of social injustice, and it never seems like domestic violence is the one that they take up as if domestic violence is not a social issue. It is, you know, it's a social injustice. And so I wish that, you know, I know the Lakers came out with a statement, some sort of statement, like they're looking into it. The one that they always make when, you know, something like
that. Right. Yeah, that they're launching their own investigation.
Like, sure, we all heard the tape. But aside from that, it just seems like athletes who are so insulated, you know, they have the money, they have the insulation, they're not really out here in the world. It just feels like we almost expect them to always get away with it. You know, when it comes to someone that's, you know, not famous or not a celebrity or not an athlete, it's like, okay, that's the bad person. But, like, this too is a bad thing. Like, this is a bad action. Threatening someone with this type of violence, especially a bullet to the head, like, that's not even normal talk. Who says that? Like, that's... Yeah. Who says that?
Like, I was expecting, like, some sort of insulting language, a couple FUs thrown in there, that sort
of thing. Not but a then, bullet to the head.
Yeah, and I saw some comments today as well. Well, she was filming it from the get-go. She was kind of baiting him into that. And with situations like this where I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but if she instinctively knew, okay, there's a chance he's going to say something along those lines, it probably isn't the first instance where there's been a threat of violence. And I really don't want to insinuate that there has been issues where it's escalated beyond threats in the past. I don't know what their history is, and I'm not comfortable speaking towards that. Yeah. But there would be some sort of inkling that things have gone that way in the past, and there's a chance that it may go that way now, and I might as well record it.
And it's ridiculous because, like, who would expect someone to say, I'm going to put a bullet in your head? Like, it's not like she said, well, what are you going to do to me? Or, you know, how about those bullets? Like, no, like, you can't predict someone's going to say what he said, which lets me know that he meant it. And that it was unexpected. Whether or not she was recording to see what he was going to say, I mean, I think that's normal when you're faced with someone who you know to be violent in some capacity, if she knows that about him. But, like, put a bullet in your head? What? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's pretty scary talk. And something I actually wanted to ask you about, Bev, you know, this is something that you've worked with a lot of domestic abuse survivors and are one yourself. And, you know, I noticed that an understated thread across after this news came out today was like kind of like a little bit it was a little victim blamey. It was a little like she recorded this, or like she shouldn't have done this to him given all his personal problems lately. And I guess yeah, and you know, beyond the obvious that there's no excuse, like I have kind of noticed this trend when these kind of issues come up is unless the alleged victim is a complete saint, has lived a perfect life, it seems like we tend to want to invalidate them a little bit societally. Can you kind of speak to that and why you think that is? And because I think it kind of ties back into the cause that kind of got you most involved in this, which is hashtag why I stayed, if you'd like to speak to that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think victim blaming is one of those things that is like now it's almost a natural reaction to an incident of violence. Like people don't even realize they're doing it. And I think there's a few reasons why. The main ones I think are, number one, we, and I mean that regardless of gender, like gender neutral, we don't think anything like this could ever happen to us. Mm-hmm. And so when it happens to someone else, we start to look for reasons why it happened to them to prevent it from happening to us. And that's just not the reality of domestic violence. Of violence in general, relationship violence. It could happen to anyone at any time. And so there's no way to figure out exactly who's going to do it or exactly what situation it's going to be when it happens. It happens to whoever it happens to. That's the first thing. And the second thing, I think, is that victim blaming has become so socially acceptable that people don't really push back on it anymore unless they are, you know, people, you know, who work in the area or people like you who know that it's wrong. It just becomes a pile-on. And so I think at the root of it is just a general misunderstanding of the complexity of domestic violence. We don't really understand why it happens or how it happens or who it happens to or what the warning signs are, or what the red flags are, or even how once you're in it, it's so difficult to get out of it. We don't really have a deep understanding of that. And so victim blaming is so commonplace that to me, it's frightening. It's frightening that I think it was Kendrick Perkins had a tweet. What did he say? I'm going to find it because it was just so dumb.
Yeah, it was Perkins.
It was Perkins.
I think it was along the lines of...
I'm pulling it up right now.
It was wrong for her to record him or to kind of entrap him was the accusation there.
Yeah, he said both were wrong for how they handled the situation, but she didn't have to set him up like that. Now, how is it a setup unless you know exactly what someone's going to do? She didn't know what he was going to say, put a bullet. Like, how would you know that? Mm-hmm. It just doesn't make sense. But furthermore, I think what we have to become comfortable with is the idea that it is okay for us to attribute blame to someone who is violent or threatened violence without looking for blame in the person that received it. I think we're always looking for, like, two things. And it's okay if it's just one thing. Like, it's okay to say he was wrong for what he did, the end. Like, we don't have to say, but there was a wedding, and but there was a kid, and but she was, like, none of that matters because she didn't say she was going to put a bullet in his head.
He said that to her. Escalate to, because, you know, I think, like, that's the thing is domestic abuse is not just physical. It is verbal threats. It's things that make people feel unsafe to be in their relationship, you know, yeah. And
or to get out of it.
Yeah.
Or to get out of it. Yeah. So with why I stayed was 2014. And so it was in direct response to the Ray Rice video that TMZ also released. That came out, and at the time I was just on Twitter to talk about music and the Cavs. We hadn't won yet. So, you know, it was a difficult time for us Cavs, you know, people on Twitter. it was a different time then. So I was on there to talk about that and to just talk, you know, mess about whatever. I hadn't really talked about domestic violence very much because it was something that I experienced and I had put it in the past. Like, I just didn't want to talk about it. I donated, I, you know, did some marches, but other than that, I wasn't really vocal about it. But that day, I remember just like a very clear feeling of guilt, you know, like in shame associated with being someone who stayed in a relationship that was violent. So I met my ex when we were in college, and he wasn't violent right away. He didn't become violent until about a year into the relationship, and he was physically violent. And I was one of those people who believed that if you just love them the right way or love them enough, do exactly what they want you to do, they'll stop. And so that was my hope for the next 2 years, that if I just did everything the way he wanted it to, he would stop. And then when I realized that that wasn't going to happen is when I left. But before I left, I made a choice to stay with him for a really long time. So when the Ray Rice video came out on Twitter, the response in large part was the question, why would she stay with him? And so people were just like going at her, just why would she stay with him? She's so stupid. She must want his money. I would never, you know, those types of things. And so, like I said, I remember just feeling like that feeling of shame, you know, that they weren't talking to me, but they were talking to me, because they were. They were talking to people like me who made the decision to stay. And so I just started to tweet some of my reasons for staying in that marriage. And I just kind of left it at that. I really didn't think anyone would care, because it's domestic violence. I mean, it's sad to say, but it's domestic violence. And people don't really, as you can see from today, like, people don't really rock with that as a social issue. So
they don't understand it.
They don't understand it. Mm-hmm. Right.
And if they do, they might not be comfortable enough to really engage and for it to kind of get the footing that it did. And I remember at that time seeing the thread and seeing the responses and things like that. And I do think that that's one of the more common things that people that, for whatever reason, aren't really willing to listen to the survivors seem to latch on to is, well, if it was so bad, why were they still with them? If this wasn't the first instance, why are they still with them? And seeing just all these people share their stories, including yourself, on just how you can kind of almost feel trapped in that cycle. And I mean, anyone that's been in an unhealthy relationship, even, like, there are aspects of that person that you care about.
Exactly.
You rationalize in your own mind, and you blame yourself at times. Well, if I did this in a different way, maybe things wouldn't have escalated that way. And I can see how it can be easy to be trapped in that sort of a situation.
Yeah, and you blame yourself as well. I mean, you are told by the person who is abusive towards you in whatever capacity that it's your fault, and you can internalize that. Like, for instance, my ex would say things like, I mean, he would go off about dishes in the sink. Like, there would be dishes in the sink, and he would lose it. And so I would internalize that as, if I put the dishes in the dishwasher, I won't get hit. And so you start to believe that if you tell yourself that, and if someone tells you that all the time. So imagine you log on Twitter, and now you have a million other people telling you the same thing that your abuser is telling you. You really do believe that. And then further, I think one thing that we don't talk about a lot is that people stay, even if it is that bad, because their abuser might threaten to kill them. You don't want to die. You know what I'm saying? Or they all threaten to kill someone that they love, their parents, a dog, their kids, you know, something, or shoot them in the head, you know, put a bullet through their head. Like, that is very real. And when you're dealing with someone who is unpredictably violent, you have to take threats seriously. And so a lot of times staying is self-preservation, because you don't want to die, or you don't want someone you love to die.
Yeah, it's really is a life or death issue. You started tweeting this thread out, and can you kind of speak a little bit to the response you got from the community at large and kind of how that's framed your path forward?
Yeah, I mean, initially was, I would say mainly survivors of intimate partner violence, just kind of tweeting their stories as well. Then it kind of snowballed from there, and then it became, you know, other people tweeting in support. I don't remember a lot of trolls that first day or two. Like there, I didn't see a lot of it until later on. But it was just a lot of support, and I think it was because people were saying something different, and they were saying it about them. It was a different time on Twitter anyway. This is before most of the social movements that happened after that. So like social activism wasn't popular, you know, right. It wasn't something that really happened. And so I think it was one of the very first times that people were talking about a social issue that's not popular, but personalizing it. So instead of, you know, you just hearing a news story about someone that you don't know, someone that you tweet with every day about cats is now telling you that they've experienced this violence. And so it becomes something you're paying attention to. That's the feeling that I got from it the first few days. And then it just kind of, it died down, I would say, in about a month or two. But people were still like asking questions or like asking for interviews and stuff like that. And so I decided, my grandma, who I named my organization after, she always used to say, you can do two things with attention. You can absorb it or you can distribute it. And so I decided that I wanted to distribute it. And so I started an organization called the LMA Foundation. And the whole purpose of the organization was so that I could create a bulk rep project. And so there are only two people involved, me and my mom. And we send bags of toiletries to victims of domestic violence, regardless of location or gender, whoever. You know, anyone can ask for a bulk bag. It's completely anonymous. And I did that on purpose because one of the barriers for me in getting out of my marriage was that everyone wanted a lot of information from me. So just to access the social services, people wanted like my name, my date of birth, and my social, and my mailing address, and sometimes his name. It's just like a lot of information I wasn't comfortable giving. Right. And so with this project, I wanted to make sure that people could ask for help with no questions asked. Like, I don't take government funding. Like, I don't pursue like grants and funding. I do it out of my paycheck. I have like a certain amount of money every paycheck that goes to shipping. For that reason, because I don't want two things. I don't want to be responsible for giving personal information of victims to anyone else. And then also, I don't want other people to have access to their information. Above all else, I want to protect victims because they're already in a situation where they don't feel safe. I don't want them asking for help to make them feel even more unsafe. And so the project is anonymous. There are a few different channels that they can submit their mailing address. I asked for a safe mailing address and an alias. It doesn't have to be a real name. I'd never know if it was anyway because I don't Google it. I delete it immediately after. It goes to Proton Mail. So it comes there. They can submit it online. They can submit it through Signal. I mean, there's a few different ways, but I get the alias and the mailing address, and then within 48 hours, I'll ship a bag of toiletries, and that could include whatever I really have here at the time. So shampoo and soap and toothbrush and toothpaste, mouthwash, just like basic things, because I want people to feel good about themselves the next day. I think a lot of times we're thinking of like someone who is escaping violence. We're like, oh, they're out of there. It's good. It's fine. It's safe. But like, what if you have a job interview the next day? Or what if you just want to be clean? You know, what if you just want to feel good about yourself in that way? I think that's something that seems small that is really big, you know, just feeling good and feeling safe and combing your hair and brushing your teeth and getting up and engaging with the world again. And so I wanted to make that possible. And that's essentially the bulk of project. Is I've been doing it for 5 years. To date, we've shipped probably about 3,000 bags.
Oh my God. Wow. That's
it's amazing. And what I love about it, well, there's several things I love about it. One of the things I love most about it that I can say is that for me, it's good information. Like, it gives me markers. I remember 1 year I was getting, I got like maybe 50 requests from Utah, maybe like 2015 or 2016, just like random requests from Utah. And then like a few months later, I found out that like Utah was having a domestic violence epidemic. Like it was just massive. But like right. I knew that before the news came out because somehow they found this and they were requesting it. That happened again in like Florida in 2016. So, I mean, it really gives me an idea of like where to look for people who might need help, try to get the word out to them.
Wow, that's amazing. I was blown away by that number, especially the fact that it's being funded entirely by donations and mainly you. I do want to note for anyone listening to the podcast, we're gonna do our part to help here at the Chase Down with the Bolt Bag. If you donate to the Bolt Bag, whether you do a single or a monthly recurring payment, whatever you can spare, and email chasedownpod@gmail.com with either a receipt or a screen grab, or just tell us, we'll believe you. That'd be a pretty weird thing to lie about. We will enter your name into a random drawing for one of our Garland Cleveland sign themed t-shirts on the pod. Probably should send one to Bev just cause. We'd really like you guys to help support this project because it's really, really cool. And it's one of Cav's Twitter's own. One thing I did want to ask Bev, this is an aspect of domestic violence that was completely unknown to me. And I don't want to speak for Justin, but I would imagine pretty close to unknown for him too. Mm-hmm. Justin and I are pretty worldly people. We're online. We pay attention. We read, we care about this shit. We care about being good people. But this is a thing that I don't think a lot of people know is like, it's not as simple as walking out the door for a lot of these women, right?
Yeah.
Like they don't always get to pack up their things and have this nice TV exit. And a lot of times they have financial dependence on their partner. Can you speak to that just a little bit?
Yeah. In fact, I'm glad you said that because finances are the number one reason that people stay in these relationships because they can't afford to get out of them, or their finances are so tied to the person that is abusing them that they can't. Like for instance, just think about it. In a normal situation, this is a normal you, you're going about your day and you want to move to a different apartment or something like that. You're thinking, I'm going to go find an apartment, I'm going to get in there, it's going to be fine. But like the steps that it takes for you to get that apartment cost money. You have to go look, that's gas money. You have an application fee, that's $40, $50. You have a security deposit, that could be like 1 month's rent. You have moving costs. You have all these things that cost money. Now imagine there is someone who is controlling your money. They know every dime you spend. Like they know when you swipe the debit card, they know if there's a dollar missing. They know, because your account is their account. It becomes that much more difficult. And then a lot of victims are forced to stop working because their abuser doesn't want them to work. You have no income. So not only do you not have income, you don't have a bank account of your own. That's one of the main reasons people stay is because they can't get out because they don't have separate finances. But aside from that, I think, you know, one thing that is really important to note is that an abuser is violent by definition, yes. But when you're escaping, it truly is an escape. So there is no, I got up one day and I walked out of the door and that was the end of it. 9 times out of 10, they come after you. 70% of women experience violence in the 2 weeks following the time that they leave a relationship. So once they've left, they're not even safe. 70% of women. And so, you know, it's a matter of finding the proper way to escape, of having a plan of escape, of having people who can help you escape. I mean, it's not an easy thing to do. For me, I had to plan my escape for 2 months. Like, I couldn't just walk out of the door. I had to steal money from him because I was one of those people. We had one bank account. So and he hates grocery shops. So he would send me to the grocery store, and I would take, like, $5 here and there from the grocery money. But that takes planning. Like, you don't just
and time.
And time. And so it hurts to say, but, like, most people who just get up and run die. That's just the fact. I mean, I hate to be morbid about it, but
that's reality. Yeah.
That's reality. They die because there's a confrontation or they're shot or they're strangled, something like that. They don't make it out because getting up and running is not an option. So you have to be willing to you have to be able to, you have to be given the opportunity to plan and strategize your way out. And I think that people really do think, oh, just get up and leave. It's that simple. What about stalking? There's some show on what, I don't know what channel it was. You can stalk the person who ghosted you and find out why they ghosted you. What the hell is that?
Like, oh, that is.
What the hell is that? Unhealthy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So like, it's not easy, especially when technology is involved. You can find anybody at any time. You
right.
could track people on their phone. Like, you know what I'm saying? So I think to your point, Carter, that like, we really have to recognize and discuss how difficult it is for someone to leave a relationship like this when they have someone who is controlling them, who may have control of the finances, or is just going to follow them wherever they go.
One thing I want to emphasize that you mentioned earlier, though, is just that the bolt bags are available to anyone. And that's kind of something that comes with the fact that you don't have to submit your information, like man, woman, somebody that has abusive parents. Like there's so many different situations where domestic violence and unsafe situations can kind of manifest. And I think it's just such a great cause that it is available to anyone. And there is such ease to access. One question I do have though is, with this being kind of a step to remove a barrier in getting free from those type of situations, are there any other barriers that you've either experienced yourself or have had other survivors kind of express that you've kind of identified as a next step or something that people could know after they have received the bolt bag to kind of continue to move on and kind of create their own independence?
Yeah, I think one thing that I hear a lot from survivors. So when I left my ex, I went straight to a domestic violence shelter where I stayed for a while.
Okay.
As part of being a resident or just a client of the shelter, I got free transportation and free mental health therapy, individual counseling, group therapy, things like that. And one thing that I hear from a lot of survivors now is that it's so difficult to access therapy, and therapy really is a game changer. Like therapy kept me from suicide. Therapy kept me from returning to my ex because I missed him. Like that's a reality. Like you have uprooted your life and you're like, oh, like, I really want to go home because you don't have a home. So I think I would love for people to donate to the Bolt Bag Project, but also like donate to shelters in your area if you can. Because that's where people will go for those services when they're ready, like for counseling services or just kind of like basic services that a bolt bag can't meet, you know? So I think that's one of the things that's really important. But I do also want to say that to anyone who may be thinking about ordering one, it doesn't have to be like a home address either. It could be a PO box, a ship to those. It could be your work. It could be a family member's house. It could be, I'm trying to figure out how to get like, you know how they have the Amazon lockers where you can just like put a code in. And in my grand plan of like bolt bag takeover, there's that option. It doesn't exist yet, but I'm working on it. But you can have it sent anywhere. And so I want people to know that it doesn't have to come to your house so that whoever is abusing you will find it. It can go anywhere. But to answer your question, I think like donating to local shelters, donating items, donating time, volunteer time is really important because they're losing funding for various reasons. We won't get into that, but funding is being pulled from domestic violence shelters because certain people in power don't think that they're important. So I think they're important.
Well, we definitely agree with you there.
Yeah.
One last thing that I definitely wanted to get in before we talk about more fun Cavsy stuff,
you know, make a very, very delicate transition.
One thing that I was kind of curious about is, you know, everyone who talks about going through this kind of talks about how isolating it is, and you know, I have and hope that, you know, none of our listeners are going through this, but it's almost a certainty that we know someone who is, statistically. How would you advocate, how would you advise on how, you know, people like me or Justin or any of our listeners could be a good ally and to our friends close and people we might not know.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, I'm glad you said that, because you are absolutely right. It's statistically impossible for all of us not to know someone who's experienced it. It's 1 in 4 women and 1 in 6 men. That's not counting the non-binary. That's not counting those who don't identify as either. 1 in 4 women and 1 in 6 men. Like, it is truly an epidemic, and you know someone, like a lot of your listeners. Mm-hmm. With that said, I think something that was really impactful for me when I was getting out of that marriage is that I had friends and family who didn't tell me what to do. And what I mean by that is they knew it was wrong. I knew it was wrong. I had come to the realization that it was wrong. But they didn't say, all right, get up, get out of there. Why are you there? It's so stupid that you're there. Like, what are you doing? This is ridiculous. They didn't do anything like that. They said, and this is almost a quote because I remember it. They said, whatever you want to do, whenever you're ready, we'll be here for you. And that was so powerful to me because it empowered me. Like, it gave me control back in a life where I didn't have control for a really long time. And so I knew I wanted to leave, but I also knew that if I questioned it, or if I got scared, if I got nervous, if I needed more help, I had friends and family there who would be understanding and gentle with me in a time where I really needed gentleness. And so I would say that to you or anyone listening or watching, that if you know someone, or you will know someone undoubtedly, or you feel like you know someone who's experiencing this, one, find the resources available. There's the National Domestic Violence Hotline here in the U.S. There's hotlines everywhere. And then there's local agencies that you can find on, like, Google. Have those available. Give them to the person that needs them, but also let them know, I'm not forcing you to make any decision that you don't want to make. I just want you to know that whenever you need me, I'm here for you. And I think that's more powerful than we give credit to.
I love it. If someone wants to support the Bolt Bag Project, where can they go?
Yes, you can go to lmafoundation.org. There's a page, Bolt Bag. I should spell that. It's ELLAMAEFoundation.org. Or BeverlyGooden.com. Or you can type in Bolt Bag Project. I think it's
that's how I found it. I just Googled Bolt Bag.
Google Bolt Bag, yeah.
Yeah, you can also find it on the at Chase Down Pod Twitter feed. We will tweet it out after the podcast. It'll be there. We'll have that pinned all week. As Carter mentioned, we are doing the free t-shirt giveaway. So if you have a donation, send it to chasedownpod@gmail.com, and we will enter you into that draw. And then if you win, we'll contact you for your information there. So, yeah,
as I mentioned, already had a few donations spill in, by the way.
Woo!
See, Carter, she's excited and she didn't spill her wine.
Relax, bro.
Take some notes on that. Is it a little too soon? A little too soon.
Relax.
All right, guys, before we move on to the next part of our podcast, we need to talk about our sponsor. Just because the calf season is still a little ways away doesn't mean you have to wait to start betting on Cleveland sports. MyBookie is the place to bet on football every single weekend. Our Blue Wire podcasters are using mybookie.com/bluewire to sign up this year. MyBookie has better bonuses and more prop bets than any other sports book, period. This year, they're hosting the first online handicapping super contest. First place is guaranteed to win at least $100,000, and it only costs $100 to enter. All you got to do is pick 5 NFL games against the spread every week to climb the leaderboard and score your share of a huge cash prize pool. MyBookie has live in-game betting on every NFL game. They got the most rewarding player perks in the business. And for you fantasy guys out there, you can even bet on the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score in each game. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE when creating your account to claim the bonus. Bet, win, get paid. Well, we are going to stumble forward and transition into a little bit of Cleveland sports action there. There's absolutely no delicate way. And Bev, I just want to say again, thank you so much for shedding a lot of light on this topic. And as I'm saying this, you are putting on a very lovely Cleveland Cavaliers hat.
Thank you.
Oh, it's great. It's a look.
Now, how So we were talking about before we went on air that you recently moved to Houston. How does it feel supporting a team with no chance at winning a championship next season in a city that has no chance at winning a championship next season?
Right. You know, Rockets fans are really full of themselves.
They love themselves. They love them some Rockets fans and nobody else.
Something's wrong with them. Like, well, you know, okay, let me not say that for people, like, blocking me. But Rockets fans are very confident. And mm-hmm. I don't know why they are, because they had Chris Paul. So, you know, I mean, maybe they can be now because of Westbrook. I don't know.
Playoff success, you know? Right there, Russell Westbrook.
So maybe there's a chance for them. It's really difficult for me because I go about the world like this, you know.
Right.
You know, I have it in my Tinder bio that I'm a Cavs fan. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just very out front. So it's hard.
I feel like that's a good thing to have in your Tinder bio, though, because it lets people know that one ring's enough. That's all you need in life. One will always be special. It was funny. At my wedding, I've shared this story before, but my brother had in his toast to me mentioned to my wife that she could leave me for 4 years, come back, and I would still love her the way LeBron did. And yeah, I'm glad she hasn't taken him up on that. But I think Cavs fandom can translate into a relationship. So I can see why you'd have that in your Tinder bio.
Yeah, you really want to communicate that. Well, it's kind of nice given that neither Justin and I are from Cleveland or really particularly close, especially Justin. So you're just one of us now. That's really what it is.
Yay!
You're an out-of-towner pretending to be an in-towner. Justin doesn't really pretend, given the Twitter handle. No, a lot of people think you live there.
I thought he did. Like, no, seriously. Like, years ago, I thought that you lived in Cleveland. I think I asked you once. I was like, are you, what part of Cleveland are you? And you're like,
North.
Canada.
North Cleveland. Well, Evan in the chat just said, isn't Winnipeg the Cleveland of Canada?
And it is. I'm taking my wife there in November, and I've explained it. It's just bigger Winnipeg. It's very, very similar. It's got, just like Winnipeg, it's got more breweries than people, and that's basically all she needs in a city. So that's she's looking forward to that. It's also right now, well, I guess it always is. And I know you guys have talked about this before. I'm going to let you guys kind of take over this segment of it. But Browns, the Browns are really good. And people seem to want to make it known that it's a lot more important than what the Cavs did in 2016. And as an out-of-towner, I find this really damn weird and a fascinating dynamic. So I'd love to hear some of your thoughts on that.
Bev, can you clear out for a minute? I got a monologue real quick.
Carter's going to unleash. And if you distract him, he's going to knock over a glass. So
just going to talk real big with my hands. If there's one thing I don't like about the internet, and we've talked about a lot of cool things the internet can do on the first half of the pod, this is one thing I do not like, and it's this this needless comparison that appears harmless but is needlessly a bummer. There's this, like, I think this all started with, like, the Ringer tweeted some poll of, like, would it be cooler, would the city of Cleveland be more hyped for? The Cavs title in 2016 or a Browns title? And it's like, yeah, probably the latter, but why are you being a dick about it? like, why do you have to reinforce that they like the other team more? It's like an inherent, like, downgrade of the Cavs title, which I thought we were all agreed on being the best day of our sporting lives. It makes me so mad, and everyone does it, especially Clevelanders. Like, oh, if you thought the Cavs one was cool, fuck you. That's cool.
I don't understand it. I mean, my parents were basketball fans first, so I'm biased to the Cavs championship. Like, the Browns is going to be great too, because obviously it's going to happen. But I mean, they're equal to me. Like, I don't get why we have to be in competition with our championships. Mm-hmm.
Know what I think it is? I think this is a case of when you get the people on the extremes that seem like a majority, but they're really just kind of a vocal minority. Like, it's the very, very outer limits of Browns fans. And then you have other people in the media that just kind of feed into that. I mean, like, for our Discord chat, for example, like, there's just, they're Cleveland sports fans, and they really want to see all the teams do well. They're very happy when the Tribe does well. They're happy when the Cavs are good. They love their Browns. And, like, everyone's going to have their favorite sport, but I think at the end of the day, you just want to see your city and the teams you love do well. It is just an absolutely fascinating dynamic. And it's just one of those things where I understand it when the Ringer does it, because the Ringer wants to minimize what the Cavs have done because they went through Boston to do it.
Right.
You ain't wrong.
And well, you know. But, yeah, I mean, and the thing about it is, like, I drove to Cleveland the night of the championship just because because I knew we were going to win. Like, I knew it. Like, I didn't know how. I knew it was going to happen, though. Like, I drove, like, 6 hours. I was in D.C. at the time. And, I mean, it was pandemonium when we won. Like, so I don't know why we have to do that thing, like, which win is going to be better. It was crazy. People were, like, jumping on fire trucks and, like, hugging cops. We don't do that. Nobody hugs cops. You know what I'm saying? Like, hugging cops and, like, jumping on fire trucks. And, like, I think, you know, some of Cavs Twitter almost got shot. Like, it was a lot going on. And so, you know, like, I don't know why we have to top that. Like, let's just have an equal amount of pandemonium.
Yeah, just be crazy. Like, that's the thing. Like, Cleveland is part of what I find so endearing as an outsider is just how much Cleveland fans care about their teams. Like, I'm jumping on the Browns bandwagon, even though I grew up as a Bears fan and then just haven't watched the NFL the last 3 years. Like, I'm jumping on the bandwagon because I just don't have a team to care about. And
that's true.
When people I get along with are happy, I'm happy, so it's a pretty natural transition. Man, you're talking about driving there because you knew they were going to win. It took me about 5 minutes after, like, the buzzer to realize they won. Like,
get out of here.
when Mo Spates took that shot, I was still trying to figure out if that thing could count for 5 points. Like, as it was in the air, I was trying to figure out what's going on. It hit the rim. All of a sudden, guys are running onto the court, and I'm trying to figure out, oh, God, no. Are they going to call, like, a tech? Or are they going to shoot free throws? Too many men on the court? Did they run on too early? Like, I just figured there was some sort of way that it was going to get either taken away, or I just didn't know how to process.
I feel like that's a natural Cleveland sports fan reaction to a game, like, because it never goes our way. Like, there's always some – you don't cuss, right? Okay. Family.
I said fuck you 2 minutes.
Oh, okay, good. There's always some bullshit that happens and it goes south and we don't win. So, like, I feel like that is the normal reaction to, like, think that something's gonna happen.
That's how I know sports. Like, that's the lens I view it through. Like,
our football, that's Winnipeg too.
Yeah, our football team, they were about to win the conference championship. They were going to go to the championship game, and on the last play, our quarterback gets his arm ripped out of his socket. And we're starting a first-time rookie at quarterback in the championship game, and we just barely lose. Like, there's just always something that goes wrong. So
okay, but how did you feel when Kyrie made – I think that's what I knew.
I didn't know. I didn't know until I was sure we were losing when LeBron missed the first free throw.
Yeah, well, no, I was, you know, I was like, LeBron, oh, my God, this game is going to go to overtime, and LeBron has a broken shooting hand. LeBron has fractured his hand. It might fall off. Like, we are screwed here. I've said this before as well. I did not watch – oh, like, that stretch where the Warriors didn't score – I didn't watch a single one of their possessions with the exception of one. Every single time I put my hands over my eyes and I just listened to the call. The only exception.
I didn't know this. Coward.
The only exception. I still have never watched any of those possessions because I refuse to watch Game 7 again. But the only possession I watched was the block because it was a turn. Like, they got the offensive rebound and they just leaked out. And I was like, all right, I've already seen it. Iggy's crossed half court. They're going to score. This game's over. And then JR gets him to hesitate. LeBron makes the greatest defensive play of all time. And we come up with a podcast name.
I was just hammered. I remember.
I was so hammered. I had still audio. I did a podcast right after the
I was on it. Me and you.
You were. Oh my God. You were on the podcast
with That's me. Fucked up.
I wish this is a bit. I wish this was a bit. I do not remember you being on it.
Yeah, we were. I was completely trashed. I got a 12 pack that I thought would like, I drank about like six or seven of. I just didn't want to run out. And it was like midway through the third quarter. And I walked up to get one more and I was out. I was like, oh no. And then I stood up and Kylie was, we had a friends over at our apartment and my now wife was sitting on the floor right in front of me. And I nearly stepped right on her head. I was just like, I was so hammered.
Was it nerves though? I feel like it was nerves because I was just nervous drinking.
I was just, every second I wasn't talking, I was drinking.
Yeah.
Do you have any predictions for the Cavs this year? Like, what's kind of your hopes with them? Because I'm hoping for fun. I think most people kind of expect them to be bad. I think I still have a sliver of hope that things can go really, really weird. And we can have like a magic of last year season where you just sneak into the playoffs. And I mean, we're talking like 2-3% chance, but I think we could be fun bad. I think we can be fun bad. I really like the young guys. Like, what's kind of your hopes and feelings going into this next year?
I don't expect much for this year. I think 20.
That's healthy. No, that's
that is the correct way to feel. So good start.
Thank you. I think 2021 is the start of our run. Like, we're gonna go on a run, and I feel like 2021. We're not gonna win in 2021. We might win in 2022, but I think 2021 is when it all comes together with our young guys, with our guys that are
gonna be back. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really hoping for Junior.
Like, Bronny on this team would be so much fun.
My gosh, I would cry.
I know that it's not healthy to want that because this team not, to like figure its shit out in a non-LeBron capacity. But I do want it.
Let's hope at that point the Cavs got good and then internet hipsters pressured the league into just doing away with the lottery so all 30 teams have a shot. And then somehow we just win that lottery and get Bronny.
But wait, I have a question.
I love that we just assume that A, he's an NBA player. B, he's going first overall.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're, you know, Carter said that they were doing things for clout the other day, and I don't remember what they were doing, but I distinctly remember
playing basketball at 5 in the morning.
Because what 14-year-old does that? But anyway, so do we honestly feel like LeBron, old LeBron, is coming back? Because I don't want him back, actually.
I think that if the only reason he would is if things went sideways and he kind of, well, maybe like a victory lap year.
It's going to be like the Dwayne Wade farewell kind of season.
Would you not want that, Bev? Like just a goodbye season?
No, I don't want him back. I am evil in
relationship. I respect the stake. I really respect the stake. Like I was okay with him leaving this time, and I'm going to welcome him back. And honestly, it's kind of a win-win because if the Lakers are going to be good, and if they are going to win a championship, at least LeBron would get a ring, and I would legitimately be happy for him.
I would like that.
It's kind of my way of hedging bets there. I'd be okay with him not coming back. I do think he is going to come back.
I think he is too, but I don't want it.
He's got the opt-out after 2 years, and at that point, Cleveland's going to be hosting the All-Star game.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of lines up. That I could see that if he's doing an early farewell tour. Who knows if he's going to own the Cavs one day. That would be a whole other interesting thing. But
I just don't want him to think that he can continue to come in and out of my life.
I respect this. I love this take. I love this take.
And this is the healthy take, because I'm just like...
Come in.
I feel like now we should start bouncing more ideas off of you. Like, just bounce off what this is what we were saying. What's your actual healthy opinion? Like, balance us out here. Right? I think that's really important.
I've had to establish boundaries with LeBron. Like what was that? It's a quote. Who is it? One of the like important people in poetry said something like, you know, don't leave me twice, or never let Maya Angelou said, never let someone leave you twice. because then they think
swing and a miss there. I'll let him leave me three times. Whatever you want, bro.
Oh man, do not let Kylie know this, Carter. Do not.
Yeah, she knows she's got me forever. It's not that's not news.
Oh, aren't you sweet? Aren't
I know. Sweet? Anyways, I made her clean up wine and then slipped in a sappy thing at the end of the podcast she'll never listen to.
Oh boy.
Meanwhile, I'm on Tinder, so.
I will say this, and I want to reiterate that I love my wife and I'm glad I'm married. We started dating like a week before Tinder came out. Nice. And I never got to fuck with it. And I remember all my friends were just, especially like, I don't know if you guys remember early Tinder, but everyone was so geeked every time they got a match. It was like a big deal.
Huge,
and
yeah.
I'm just sitting there like, motherfucker.
It's a wasteland.
I know it's terrible, but it's like, it's like one of those ballpark foods that look hilariously unhealthy that like get made just for social media clout. Like, yeah. You know, it's not good. It's you know, it's not good for you, but you still are like, I kind of want to try it.
But still, I swipe.
My wife and I were roommates before we were dating. Very,
speaking of healthy.
Yeah, very, very normal situation. And I remember when she came up on my Tinder and I was like, I have to make a decision here. Like, what's going on? I had to make a decision there. I mean, at that point there had already been some funny business and whatnot, but I was like, what am I gonna do here? This is a real big decision.
Did you swipe right on your wife?
I did.
Okay, good. Yay!
Yeah. I mean, I could have just messaged her like on Facebook or texted her, but
a problem in the relationship if like a couple years down the line you told this story, but the result had been that you swiped left.
Oh my goodness.
Do you think she would have been offended, or do you think she would have appreciated that you respected her boundaries? I don't know Trish that well.
I think she would be indifferent. I don't think she cares about much.
Sounds much like my wife.
Oh, perfect. Beverly, thank you so much for coming on. Really, really do appreciate it. This seems like a natural spot to wrap before things get really, really off the rails.
Before we piss off our wives.
As we mentioned earlier, we are going to tweet out the link to the Bolt Bag. You can also Google it. Really easy to find. It's just such a great cause, Beverly. And as I mentioned before, I just really... I love how easy it is to use, and just it helps remove such a crucial barrier when you are trying to get out of those situations. And also thank you for like just shining kind of a light on these issues and helping us kind of talk through some of this stuff, because especially with DeMarcus Cousins stuff coming out, and I'm sure there's going to be more stuff, unfortunately, in the coming months, because that's just kind of the nature of this epidemic. But instead of us just being two dudes talking about it actually getting a really informed perspective is something that I really do appreciate.
I want to say that you are two dudes talking about it, but you did really well. You did a service to domestic violence victims and survivors and listeners. I think it's really important that you all did this, and I'm so thankful that you did it, because it doesn't happen. Like, people don't really talk about it. Men don't really talk about it. Sports people really don't talk about it. So, you know, I think it's really big that you all talked about it. I'm really thankful and grateful that you chose me to talk about it with you.
Well, you're the best, Bev. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Remember, guys, if you donate, send the email. Let us know at chasedownpod@gmail.com, and we will enter you into our t-shirt giveaway. If you want to support our podcast, you can rate, review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, help cook those books. Nice. So thank you so much to Bev. Thanks to Carter. Thank you to all our listeners. And until next time, go Cavs.
Go Cavs!